Welcome. You are listening to Aftersight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Thank you for joining us for Food and Stuff. My name is Gretchen Miller. Today we're going to start off with an article from The Blind Kitchen on how to hold a knife, the safest finger positioning for the hand holding the knife. Cuts and scrapes from kitchen knives are common but entirely preventable. Learn how to hold a knife in this first part of a series covering kitchen knife safety for cooks who are blind or vision impaired and everyone else. Pinch the blade tightly between your thumb and your index finger. First, you're going to hold the clean, dry knife in your clean, dry, dominant hand, the hand you're cutting with. Second, pinch the lowest portion of the side of the steel blade tightly between your thumb and index finger. Your index finger will be curved, not extended along the spine of the knife. Your pinch should be just above the top part of the handle. Third, curl your other three fingers safely around the handle of the knife. Regardless of the length of the blade, pinching the lowest portion of the blade, the portion next to the handle, and circling your remaining fingers around the handle will keep the sharp side of the blade facing downward and keep your hand safe. This is true regardless of the length of the blade. Pinching the knife is the safest way to keep it from turning in your hand should it get wet or oily, and it allows you to keep the sharp blade always facing downward. You can use a cut glove. The Blind Kitchen cut glove will also help you keep your hand safe while using knives in the kitchen, though these are designed for use on the hand holding the food. Coming soon, check back for a new post, which will be part of the three-part series covering safe ways to protect the hand that is holding the food while cutting with a knife. Next, we've got a recipe for basic pie dough, the flakiest. This from theblindkitchen.com. This made from scratch pie crust is incredibly flaky. The butter and shortening need to be frozen and the dough has to rest and chill for at least 2 hours before it can be rolled. It can be refrigerated for up to a day in advance or frozen for up to 6 months. It's going to yield 1 9-inch pie crust. Recipe tip. If you're making a double crust pie, you need to make two recipes. To make the flakiest crust, it's best if you make each crust separately and do not double the recipe. It will change the handling instructions and take longer to make, making the cold ingredients come to room temperature too soon. Recipe note, this recipe as written is for a sweet crust. If you want to make a savory crust, such as for a chicken pot pie, you can substitute 1/2 teaspoon of garlic powder and 1/2 teaspoon onion powder or other herb of your choice in place of the sugar. So the ingredients will be 6 ounces, that's 3/4 cup of unbleached all-purpose flour. This will be more accurate if it's weighed. 1 tablespoon of granulated sugar, 1/2 teaspoon of salt, 3 ounces of cold unsalted butter cut into pea-sized pieces, 1.5 ounces of frozen vegetable shortening cut into pea-sized pieces, 6 teaspoons of ice cold water, and 3 teaspoons of fresh lemon juice. The Blind Kitchen tip number 1, set up your work area and first run a few inches of warm soapy water before you start the recipe so you have a handy place to plunge your fingers when needed. And by the way, TBK, which I'm going to use from now on, it stands for The Blind Kitchen. So TBK tip number 2, have a towel available at your side that travels with you to quickly dry your fingers. TBK tools, apron, and towel clips, and there are links to buy those at theblindkitchen.com. TBK tip number 3, use a work tray to contain any ingredients that you are working with. The dough and pastry work tray is recommended because of its raised sides and large working surface that will help keep sprinkled flour where it belongs, especially when sprinkling flour on your work surface as you roll out the dough. TBK tool, dough and pastry work tray. Recipe tip. The butter and shortening need to be cut into small pieces and frozen before they become part of the dough. Keeping them as cold as possible is crucial for a flaky result because as a gluten network, sort of like a net throughout the dough, is formed, the frozen fats will help hold a hole in the network in place. After the fats melt, the hole will still remain if the fats were still frozen when the dough was rolled. These air holes are what make a pie crust flaky. Recipe tip, there are several ways to cut the butter and shortening into small pieces. Option number one, you can freeze the correct portion of butter and shortening in stick form and then use a box grater to grate it into small pieces. Immediately put the grated fats back into the freezer while you prepare the rest of the dough. Option two, cut the correct amount of the cold sticks of butter and shortening into small pieces, about pea size, and then put them into the freezer. TBK tools that you might want are a cut glove and a butter slicer. Recipe tip. Many bakers and pastry makers weigh their ingredients using a scale. This does result in consistently accurate measurement, but you can still get good results using standard measuring tools. TBK tools, a talking scale or dry measure cups, and dry measure spoons. Step number one, you're going to put 6 ounces, that's 6 tablespoons of unsalted butter, into the freezer. You can cut it into pea-sized pieces now or wait until the stick is frozen and grate it. Step number two, do the same with 1.5 ounce pieces of shortening in the freezer. Do not mix these with the butter pieces. Step number three, squeeze 3 teaspoons of fresh lemon juice and set it aside in the refrigerator to keep it as cold as possible. TBK tip, most lemons produce more than 3 teaspoons of juice. Put the leftover fresh lemon juice in 2 teaspoon portions into a small, snack sizes ideal, resealable bags. You can lay them on their sides in the freezer and allow them to freeze into thin sheets of lemon juice. Take the bags out as needed. Because they're so thin, they will thaw quickly and will taste just as fresh as the day that you squeeze them. That's a good tip. Step number four, add 6 teaspoons of water to the 3 teaspoons of lemon juice and put them in the refrigerator to keep the mixture as cold as possible, but not frozen. Step number five, this is a tricky step, but necessary. First of all, choose a flat surface that is not near where you will be mixing your ingredients. Place 2, that would be about 24 inches or so each, of overlapping cling wrap. They should form a plus sign overlapping in the middle. The easiest way to do this is to take 1 long piece and place it on a work tray or baking sheet, trapping the ends under each of the sides so that the tray traps the ends. And now your hands are free and the cling wrap is secure and smooth. Now take the 2nd length of cling wrap and lay it opposite the way that you laid the first one, making sure that they overlap in the middle. I find it helpful to then place a heavy object such as a mixing bowl in the very center of the overlap to free up my hands again and then smooth out the 2nd sheet of cling wrap. You will be placing the ball of finished dough in the center of this plus sign soon. Step number 6, use a small food processor to mix the dry ingredients. Put 6 ounces or 3/4 cup of unbleached all-purpose flour into the food processor. Step number 7, add 1 tablespoon of granulated sugar to the food processor. Step number 8, add 1/2 teaspoon of salt to the food processor. Recipe tip, the more the dough is manipulated, the less tender and flaky it will become. The gluten network that is needed to create a flaky crust gets firmer and firmer the more it's handled. Think of the difference between a flaky croissant and a firm pizza dough. The pizza dough has a lot of firm gluten work to it, and it forms a fabulous food delivery system. But if you want a light and flaky pie crust, follow the next steps carefully and work as fast as you can so that the butter and shortening don't get to room temperature and melt. Step number 9, pulse the dry ingredients 7 to 8 times to mix well. A pulse is about a 1 second push of the button and then release. Gluten does not form until liquid is added to wheat flour, and that is going to happen in the next step. Step number 10, add the frozen butter pieces to the shortening and the shortening pieces to the food processor and pulse for 10 to 12 pulses until the pieces are slightly larger than pea size. Step number 11, Drizzle the cold lemon juice and water blend over the contents of the food processor so that it is evenly drizzled over the flour mixture. Pulse 8 or 9 times until the dough forms moist crumbs that just begin to clump together. It will not look or feel like pie dough yet. It will be more like a pile of wet crumbs. Step number 12, you're going to dump the moist crumbs into the center of the overlapping pieces of cling wrap and gather them into a pile in the center with your hands. Step 13, you're going to carefully gather and then twist the four ends of the cling wrap above the pile of wet crumbs. Twist the four ends together so that the crumb mixture is now in the bottom of what looks like a sack. Twist the ends together so that the crumbs are trapped in the bottom of the sack. Do not make this airtight. Just make sure that the sack can be lifted and no crumbs can fall out. Step number 14, hold the twisted ends of the sack in one hand and use the heel of your other hand to gently push and smear one part of the pile of dough away from you. Just one gentle push will do. Then rotate the sack 1/4 turn so you can use the same gentle push to smear a different section each time until the crumbs come together. 4 or 5 pushes and smears should do it. The pushing motion causes the crumbs to form a more dough-like product. Step number 15, you need to work quickly with this step as the heat of your hands will melt the butter and shortening if you handle it for too long. Open up the cling wrap sack and use your hands to form the dough into a 5-inch disc, sort of like an oversized hockey puck. Wrap it tightly in the cling wrap and refrigerate until firm, at least 2 hours or up to 24 hours, or you can actually freeze it for up to 6 months. Step number 6, you're going to roll into the desired shape when you're ready for use. TBK tip, if you're going to make a round pie, before you put the bottom or only crust into the round pie pan, place the heat-proof bake under the crust pie server in the pie pan. So this is a product that's available at theblindkitchen.com. The bake under the crust pie server is shaped like a pie wedge, but the handle conforms to the rounded edge of the pan, and the triangle point is placed facing the center of the unbaked pie under the crust. You can then add the crust on top and fill as desired. Our bake under the crust pie server will not affect the look or the cooking process of the pie. You cook the pie with this tool in place, and when you're ready to serve the pie, the first piece is easy to remove. Just cut around the triangle-shaped pie server that is in the pan. You can feel the shape of it with the blade of your knife, and it will lift right out. TBK tools to form the dough. There's an adjustable rolling pin, a pie dough bag, a crust crimper, top crust stencil, pie marker and divider, and bake under the crust pie server, and an egg separator. Next, we've got a recipe for you from smittenkitchen.com. This for Morning Glory breakfast cake. It's hardly the biggest surprise of parenting, but I've yet to get my head around the idea that I've taken part in creating a morning person. My son has always woken up early. If it's 5 or 5:30 a.m., he's on the sofa reading a thick book, wondering why we do not care to watch the sunrise with him. Over the years, we've tried everything to change his wiring, lecturing, star charts, bribery, begging, asking the pediatrician to talk some sense into him. Although, quote, he wakes up early and reads chapter books, didn't quite have the doom and gloom impact that we thought it would. Prayer, and eventually you might have inferred from referring to it as wiring, we gave up. When you wake up at the crack of dawn, you also require breakfast at an earlier hour than normal people, like your parents, who love to sleep. So there's no confusion as to what it is and what is not breakfast food. We've taken to packing him a breakfast and leaving it in the fridge. Maybe a hard-boiled egg, some fruit, cheese, and some sort of a muffin. After working my way through my own muffin archives, I realized that I was missing one of those hippie morning glory-ish muffins that he loves, loaded with carrots and apple and dried fruit and sometimes coconut and spices. I've made a few versions over the last few months and was about to go another round when a new wonderful cookbook arrived at my doorstep, Yossi Arafi's Snacking Cakes. I probably don't need to tell you that the idea of a snacking cake is firmly within the SK wheelhouse. I think cakes can be an everyday, just because it's Monday thing. And lucky for us, Arefi does too. I went right for the Morning Glory cake and wondered why I've been fussing with muffin liners and trying to achieve the perfect dome when pouring it all in a pan is just so much easier. I've tweaked Arefi's recipe to make it even more breakfasty. I lowered the sugar and oil just a bit, swapped in whole wheat flour, raw sugar for white, added some dried fruit as well as coconut, both nods to the original, some ginger because I like it here, and I used some toasted salted pepitas on top. The cake remains plush and perfect for whatever hour that you call breakfast. Did you know that the Morning Glory Muffin has an official recipe? Pam McKinstry created them in 1978 for her restaurant on Nantucket. The recipe was first published in Gourmet in 1981, and they were wildly popular for decades. Here's the recipe. Morning Glory Breakfast Cake. It serves 12 to 16, takes 1 hour, and the source is Snacking Cakes by Yossi Arefi. No need to peel the apple or carrot before you grate them. The original recipe uses 1/2 cup of chopped toasted pecans instead of the coconut. Half are in the cake, half sprinkled on top. It used 3/4 cup each sugar and oil. Excuse me. But I prefer the cake for breakfast with the reduced levels below. It's also called for 1 tablespoon of optional flax seeds on top, but I use 2 tablespoons of pepitas instead. This cake has a lot of built-in flexibility, and many swaps not listed might work, such as pears for apples or zucchini for carrots, but the baking time might be longer. Note, you can watch the Instagram story demo of this recipe over here, and there is a link at smittenkitchen.com. For the ingredients, you'll need 1 cup of grated apple from 1 7-ounce medium-large apple, 1 cup of grated carrot from 1 thick carrot, 1/2 cup of very well-drained crushed pineapple or chopped fresh pineapple, 1/3 cup of shredded unsweetened coconut, 1/4 cup raisins or another dried fruit, this is optional, and finely grated zest of 1 lemon, 2/3 cup of raw or granulated sugar, 2/3 cup of a neutral oil, 2 large eggs, 1/2 teaspoon of ground cardamom, 1/2 teaspoon of ground ginger, 1/2 teaspoon of ground cinnamon, and 3/4 teaspoon of kosher salt, 1 1/2 teaspoons of baking powder, and 1 1/2 teaspoons of baking soda, 1 1/4 cups of all-purpose or whole wheat flour, and 2 tablespoons of toasted salted pepitas. These are optional. You're going to heat your oven to 350 degrees Fahrenheit and coat an 8-inch square baking pan with butter or nonstick cooking spray. Line the bottom with parchment and let it extend up 2 sides of the pan. In a large bowl, combine the apple, carrot, pineapple, coconut, dried fruit if using, lemon zest, sugar, and oil. Add eggs and whisk to combine, and then sprinkle spices, salt, baking powder, and baking soda over the batter and stir very well to combine. Add flour and stir just until it disappears. Pour the batter into a prepared pan and smooth the top. Sprinkle pepitas over the cake if you're using, and then bake for 30 to 35 minutes until a toothpick inserted into the center of the cake comes out batter-free. Let cool in the pan and then carefully cut into squares with a serrated knife. The cake is very moist and a little crumbly. I find that it keeps best in the fridge. And the cake will keep for 4 to 5 to 6 days, actually chilled. Sounds good. Our next recipe is for toaster quesadillas. This one from theblindkitchen.com. These handy little snacks are easy to make and there are no dirty dishes. Just 2 ingredients and a napkin and you are ready to eat in less than 5 minutes. Yield, one serving. This is 2 quesadillas per person. The ingredients, 2 flour street tortillas, about 4 inches in diameter, and 2 slices of cheese of your choice. The directions, you're going to lay the flour tortillas on a napkin, put a slice of cheese on each one. The square or circle of cheese should not extend beyond the round flour shells. Fold the shells in half with the cheese slices folded inside the flour shells. You should now have 2 half circles in front of you. Now comes the tricky part. Pick up one of the half circles with the folded side facing down and the open side facing up. Use your thumb and middle finger to gently pinch the lower bottom of the half circle near the fold, and then use your index finger to gently push about 1/4 of an inch of the flour shell between the slices of folded cheese, and then pinch it gently. The pinch should hold together now by itself, and this creates a boundary so that when the cheese melts in the toaster, it will stay inside the shell. Pinch the other side and gently guide it into the toaster slot. Do the same with the other shell and cheese and put it into the different toaster slot. Then toast them to your liking, just as you would bread. When the toast pops up, you can wait for them to cool before removing them, or you can use our short wood tongs to pull them out while still hot. And there is a link on theblindkitchen.com. Here's a secret. On most toasters, once the toaster handle is in the up position, you can lift that handle and it will allow the toast to rise an additional inch or so higher with no heat. This is perfect for smaller items such as English muffins, cinnamon raisin bread, and these toaster quesadillas. But you have to hold the handle in this higher position. If you let go, the bread will lower again by default. Enjoy. Here's a few notes on the toaster quesadillas. This is the most basic recipe, but there is no end to the variations that can be made. Pizza toaster quesadilla. You can spread a tablespoon of pizza sauce into a thin layer in the center of the flour shell. You can add a slice of mozzarella cheese and 4 pepperoni slices. Fold and toast. Instant pizza. Thank you for joining us for Food and Stuff. My name is Gretchen Miller.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.